All right, there we go. Welcome to the Archangels Lang Show. We're here today. My guest, Garrett Light. Garrett, we already talked about this a little bit while we were playing golf, because you love golf.
I do.
But what do you love the most? I mean, your job. We'll start there.
Okay.
How do you define yourself?
Well, I'm an eyewear designer. I guess that's how I'm defined, as an eyewear designer. In reality, that's funny because I don't do a lot of designing. I actually have a design team, and that was really my dad's thing. He still is a great eyewear designer.
And your dad's name is not Oliver Peoples.
No, his name's Larry Light, and he founded Oliver Peoples. But I personally am involved in the design, but I'm more marketing and business and run an eyewear business, a global eyewear business.
Right.
Yeah, that's how I define myself.
And, I mean, you kind of shrug it off. You don't seem to make a big deal out of it. I mean, I guess you can do that, but I mean, you know, it's a pretty big deal. Like,
yeah,
how many other eyewear companies are out there that are doing stuff that's as cool as what you're doing?
I mean, that's what I shrug off. It's hard. Maybe it's like a humble thing or something. Like, as cool as what I'm doing, you know, like people are doing cool stuff out there. I think, but maybe I shouldn't shrug it off. We've accomplished a great thing. We've built a brand in 9 years, and we have 70 employees worldwide and 1,000 accounts and our own retail stores. So, you know, it is an amazing thing that we've accomplished and done. I would never be crazy enough to do it again. Like, I think about what I did 10 years ago, and I was traveling the world with a suitcase on a train, and like, I had so much energy. And it's just now, fast forward, it's like, we did it. We're here. So it's a great accomplishment, and it's because we're doing cool shit, obviously.
You wouldn't do it again. That's interesting to hear, because you're such a great success story.
I would do it differently.
What would you do differently?
Well, it's out of context, right? Like, if I had, at the time I had less resources. Now it's like, I'm 9 years. If I was doing an eyewear company again, I would have, people would know me, right? But assuming they didn't,
right,
and I had, and somehow knew what I had to go through, I don't know that I could do it again. Just there's so many people like saying no and putting, you know, like saying he's not going to, you just like overcome. It's a battle. And I would be on the road sometimes for like 40 days in a row, which you probably know about a little bit. And it's exhausting. It's really exhausting.
And basically you're getting a lot of no's. And how do you keep going?
I just, a will to win, you know. I think for me, the reason I wanted to start a company and be successful is because my father was, and I wanted to prove that I could do something outside of his shadow. Shadow maybe wasn't there, but I perceived it.
Right.
And I worked at his company, and I left it because I felt like people judged me, you know, based on the fact, oh, he's the owner's son. And I just, my mind was too insecure with all that. And I wanted to prove that, you know, I had my own good ideas and I could launch my own business and be successful. And, you know, and it's not in spite of my dad, but that's not what you would say. But yeah, even though I had that, and for better or worse, or whether people realize it or not, like, you know, he had started Oliver Peoples more than 20 years ago. So he didn't have, it's not like I just had the connections. He was just designing at this point. Like, we used a different factory. He didn't know the buyers at Barney's. I had to seek them out. My whole goal was, I wanted to launch this brand. And if Colette, which was a store in Paris that's no longer there, was the most important store in the world, I was like, I'm not shipping anybody until they buy. And they're like the most arrogant people. They're impossible to sell to. I flew to Paris 3 times. And they like for shows. And every time I tried to get knock on their door, and I sent them emails, and finally we got a feature in style.com, and I sent it to the lady. Her name is Sarah. And she's like, oh, this is great. Can I see it? And I bought a ticket the next day, flew to Paris. This is the shit I wouldn't do again. You see what I'm saying?
Really?
And I flew to Paris next day, went in, and she bought the collection. I was like, okay, we're good to go. Because somebody told me, they go, if you get into Colette, you'll get it anywhere in the world.
Whoa.
And it basically was, it's the truth.
That's so cool. And you just recognize the importance of, like, that was your opportunity, and that's what you seized when you had it.
I just took that advice to the next level. Like, I really took that literally. And I think that at the time, if there was a Colette today, I don't know, but at the time it was true. I mean, if you could get in there, the right people would see it. And if they bought it and they did well and reordered, everybody else would want it.
Well, this was also 9 years ago or whenever it was, which is no Instagram.
No Instagram.
Kind of a different world, you know, like news didn't spread in the same way it did. Influencers didn't mean anything. You didn't, you know, there was no hashtag sponsored post.
I'm lucky in that way. I consider myself, and this is not my phrase, I saw it on a comedy show, but like an elder millennial. And because technically I am a millennial because I'm born in 1984. But that's like around the cusp.
Yeah.
And today it's much different than it was 9 years ago. Like, you could still do it traditionally. did it traditionally. I have a wholesale business.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
Now the only thing you can start is direct to consumer.
I mean, you could do wholesale, but it's like a whole new thing of like, you like the investment for influencers and all that. You know, there was only celebrity back then. There was no influencers. They were the influencers, the celebrities. Right. Right? Now there's tiers. We're influencers. You know, like
supposedly,
it's like in some way.
Supposedly.
Which is ridiculous.
It's
kind of
absurd.
It's absurd. But yeah.
But what's interesting is actually, if we can dig into that for a second, you know, the idea that we are influencers, like, well, first of all, I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I like the word. I try to think of myself as more as a journalist. But in some sense, I think that whoever says that, they're probably not wrong, because what it seems like people are craving now is, you know, would they want a smaller experience?
Yeah.
Right. So me with my little 30,000 follower account, making a couple YouTube videos here and there, like, it almost feels like they're going to the pub down the street and seeing a friend's band.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that doesn't exist really out there in the world, because otherwise it's just the millions and millions of The Rocks and everyone else, and it's relatively impersonal.
Definitely. And I think the secret's out. Like, everybody knows The Rock gets paid to wear things. You know, everybody knows that celebrities get shit for free.
Wait, The Rock does? I know he does the Under Armour thing, but...
Do you think
The Rock gets paid by Netflix when he does the sushi meal cheat train?
Maybe.
I think he does.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Do you think he gets money from Netflix?
And we don't get paid to wear things.
I don't.
Right, so that's more influential. You're a journalist with the ability to influence an audience to like things. I actually was hit up recently for the first time and offered to wear some shoes that I like the shoes anyways already for money and post it. And I asked which Instagram they wanted it on, my 100,000 one or my 6,000. I said the 6,000 one.
Interesting.
And I said, okay, that's great. I was like, I totally agree with you, actually. That's a much better one. And they're like, yeah, well, we sell to kids and you're a dad and we sell to parents too. So we think that your personal one has a more of a family following. And I'm like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's like the micro influencer market.
I mean, yeah. So I mean, I'm an eyewear guy who can influence people to buy something. I'm not an influencer.
Well, what's cool about what I would say is, you know, we're sitting here now. You're wearing a tie dye. Is that a tank top?
No, it's a shirt.
It's a tie dye T-shirt with a low neck.
Very low neck.
A blue denim vintage like button down kind of cowboy shirt.
It's a Levi's.
Levi's with pearl-ish, mm-hmm. And then, you know, like khaki pants and, you know, but you've
drop
got
crotch.
Drop crotch pants. You're stylish, but you know, but the crazy thing is, Garrett, is you play golf, which doesn't add up.
Really?
I mean, it's so sad. It shouldn't. It should. I don't know whether which one it is, but when you tell people you play golf at a party, how often are they surprised?
That's not even the first. Like, the first thing is just like, really? Like,
really? What do you mean?
You and all the other white rich guys out there? You know the George Carlin joke, right?
No.
Well, I shouldn't even have brought that up, because I won't articulate it perfectly, but he has a line about how they should build housing on golf courses, because golf is just rich white men who get together, who use the game to carve up this country a little finer, something like that. And it hurts, because it's so funny. It's true. It's mostly true.
It is sad.
But not us, not here.
It's sad that a lot of comedians hate golf. It's easy to rail on.
It's so easy.
And so that's what I'm saying is, like, you have great style. Like, you have great style. You have style that scares me.
No,
like, your socks are vintage Patagonia socks, I'm noticing right now. And, you know, but I mean, so being that way, do you struggle with the cultural identification of being a golfer?
No, I just don't give a fuck what people think about me, really.
You don't care?
Yeah, my brain just doesn't go there. But I do understand that at my style, like, in some settings, it's not, maybe not intimidates, but, like, makes people be, like, a little, like, oh, whoa, that scares me.
Right.
I think I wore something recently at Bel Air, and they, like, you know, kind of scared them.
Yeah, they are not ready for it. But, I mean, hey, if you follow the rules, right, belt loops, belt.
I had belt loops and I had a collared shirt on and there was nothing, I had a hat.
Well, I mean, but you, how have you found that in your career, being normal or not being normal, has that, what has that taught you or helped you along
I'm
the way?
Burning up.
It's a little hot in here. Yeah, hang on
burning.
A second. Hang on one second. So the car is what we're in. That's the mobile podcast studio. Yeah. Once again, we played some golf and Garrett got too hot. I was getting hot too. I was just like, I'm going to hold on.
I was like too, but yeah. I'm just a big, I'm from LA.
But
yeah, I can't do that type of stuff.
The question that had been posed to you was being different. How has that helped or hurt your career?
I think it helps. I'm confident in saying it because people have reached out to me in the last 9 years over Instagram or in person and just like today when those guys were like, I love your shit, Eric, you know, like that's happened to me. People have been like, I love every, you know, like over Instagram, like, you're such an inspiration. I love the way you dress. I love the music. Cause you know, I think a lot of popular designers now, like, they're missing something, you know, their musical taste or style or something. So when someone compliments you and basically says you're firing on all cylinders, you know, I mean, it just encourages you to keep doing what you're doing and not be change what feels natural to you. So the way I dress, the way I act, the things I do has always just come natural to me. And people have applauded it around along the road. And I just stay the course of being me. And that just happens to be someone who maybe is a little more outgoing with the things that they wear. But, and I've learned, I've made mistakes along the way going a little too over the top, but yeah, I think it's helped me. It's helped me be a unique individual in that way. And some people call it peacocking, you know? Do you know what that is?
It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't feel that way to me.
No, it's not though.
But I didn't realize Colette is closed.
They closed in December of 2016, maybe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was this really cool store. It was kind of like the...
17.
It was like a design store, kind of, but it had clothes and all sorts of knickknacks. I mean,
they had, you know, $100,000 Audemars watches and Rolexes and, you know, bejeweled iPhone cases to $20 T-shirts. You know, they were like the, you know, the quintessential curator of all things fashion. And
why do you think they why did they close? Just business or just time?
I mean, that's a deep... I'm a very opinionated person. I have a deep opinion on why they closed.
I'm dying to know.
So, it could be so wrong.
Okay.
But it just... Okay, so Colette is like... You don't talk bad about... Like, they are... you shouldn't. I mean, they... I think... I once heard that they do, like... They've done... I don't even know what the number is, but they did, like, $3 million a day there. You know, on their biggest day. So they're obviously incredible, but there was it was founded by the mom.
Okay.
And then her daughter started running it the last 10 years, at least when I was around. And the mom was really behind the scenes. And all I know is I read a story when it closed, and it was from the mother. Her name's Colette, and her daughter's name is Sarah. And it just said, we have to close the store because I think she's getting older, because I can't be involved, and without me involved, this can never truly be Colette. Which is such a dig on her daughter, who is basically running it. It's saying, I'm the only one that can do this.
Well, and you know, this, you could probably relate to this experience with a relationship with your father.
Right. I mean, luckily I built my, like, my, it's a separate company. He still worked for other people at the time, so I was sort of forced to do so, and he sold it, and they were public.
Okay.
So the beauty of what she said is she had many off, this is what I love about it, because it's punk rock. She said, fuck it, I'm not selling, Colette is done, because I can't run it anymore, and nobody can do it like me, and I'm not selling it to some people, you know what I mean, to carry it on, and just, that is punk rock, and I love it.
It's like an art form.
I mean, that's rad.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, I think there's a little bit of, you know, maybe some Frenchness going on there.
There's a lot of Frenchness over there in France. How do you see, you know, because ultimately, would you say, how much of your job is like sales?
So much now, I think. I mean, I'm, for better or worse, it's hard to never not be. I mean, like, selling right now in a way, you know.
Yeah, sure.
The idea of me and supporting me and my brand and the things that we do. And that really comes naturally to the lights, you know, my mom, my dad. It's like, we're all just, I mean, just, it's not, we're not even, I don't think we're, I'm not trying. It just, anyways, I'll stop there.
No, but I'm curious. I mean, what have you learned about sales? What's important to know?
Okay, are you talking about like to a consumer in a retail store? It's so different. It could be to, you know, whether you're selling it to a wholesaler. I haven't mastered the art of selling the investors.
I think
that makes sense. There's literally, it's a different, whole different thing.
Right. Well, I guess I mean less business-wise and more like the philosophy of sales. Like the idea of you have a product, whether it's material, conceptual, whatever it is, and you want to have someone else understand and accept and want to be involved.
I mean, so first of all, there needs to be a genuine passion coming from everybody involved with that product, if we're talking about products. You know, the thing about us, and we've always, you know, educated our staff to really understand what we do, why we do it, the materials and the work that goes into buying a $300, you know, which is basically a luxury product.
Yeah.
So you need to, your team needs to have those tools, and they need to feel like passionate about moving that product. That's a key ingredient, I would say. We don't like to, you know, I don't like to overpower people. Like, it's not the end of the world. If you don't like it, it's not for you. No worries. But ultimately, you know, for us, it's about making a quality product. It's about being authentic, genuine, and being able to, you know, sell that product to people. And it's really a sensitive subject because we sell prescription eyewear. So you're talking about a look and also someone's vision and eyesight. So it's really, they're very sensitive to that decision. It's not like styling someone in a pair of pants or shoes. It goes away. It's one pair. Like, we're really changing an entire person's persona by picking a frame. And a lot of people are uncomfortable with that choice. They have to wear glasses. They need to. They can't see. And, you know, you're defining their character. So I think just understanding all that, the sensitivity to the product that we're selling and just making a great product and believing in it and surrounding yourself with people that are passionate about the brand and what you're selling and not selling, you know, bullshit, really. I mean, that's where it starts to get ugly.
Well, what's interesting is I just realized something. Like you said, you know, $300 for a frame, but you wear them every day. It's not like a pair of jeans that you wear, like, 50 times over the lifetime.
Jeans is not even the best, because you do wear jeans a lot. It's not like, it's more like other stuff too. Shirts, yeah. You're always changing your shirt. Whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, t-shirt, yeah. It's interesting in that sense. I mean, and also, I mean, eyewear is such a, especially when you get down into, I've always been like a sunglass freak. In fact, I didn't tell you this. In fact, the last pair of expensive glasses I bought was Oliver Peoples.
Okay.
This was before you had started your company. I was in New York. I was about 15 years ago. And I remember I went in and
Soho store?
Yeah, exactly. Right there on Broom, on the corner there. And I remember I walked in and I was like, wow, these are amazing. And I was like, well, I can't afford them. And I was like, fuck it. And I bought them and I lost them like 2 weeks later. And I was just like, I'm never going to do that again.
You lost them?
Yeah. Ugh. But that's my thing, is like, I just lose stuff. Like, I know you've seen get $2 reading glasses off Amazon.
Have seen those.
You're making such an uncomfortable face.
Well, it's just because, God, like, just get this. I don't know.
Okay, we can circle back to that. But I just have found, like, that, but that, it was, I realized I never told you that story and just how it was, like, a pivotal moment for me where I was, the joy of buying them was overshadowed only by the pain of just being separated.
I wonder how much of our business is like a refill. I lost my glasses business. A lot of eyewear brands not exist, but flourish on this idea that people lose their. I mean, it happens all the time.
I'm sure.
And we have a lot of people that have sort of disposable. I mean, they're like, fuck, I lost it. Yeah. We had a guy come in, like a guy who he had 15 pairs of glasses and valet stole them or something. All of them.
All?
And he wanted to replenish every one of them.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I know, right?
That's a lot.
Slowly. I think he did like 6 the first day and then came back like a week later. He's like, oh, I need that one and it'll take 4 more. And
So is there a rivalry between you and your dad or no? It doesn't sound like it, really.
I don't think so, no.
It's pretty awesome.
No, there's not a rivalry there.
How did you end up playing golf? Was it him or what? What was the story there?
People always laugh when I say it, but from what I remember, it was Tiger Woods 97 Masters. Like, I lived 3 blocks from Rancho Park. You know, I was a tennis player. I played tennis in college. So the country club, we weren't members of any country clubs, but, it's a country club game. Right. And, I don't know. I think he just won and it just like swept over the nation. Everybody in school was talking about it. So one Saturday, me and my friends were like, let's go play the 3-par. And then, you know, we're all athletes. So it kind of wasn't, you know, it's such a hard game, but like, it wasn't that hard. I mean, you know, probably had a par the first time out. Like, I could hit the ball and, you know, so I was like, I like this. And I notice a lot of people that I play with now, even you, I think, are like, I hated it the first time or I liked it. And then I hadn't played for 20 years. I don't have that story. Literally, golf has been part of my life since I was 13. I have played a minimum of 12 rounds a year when I was in college. I've never not played. I've always had to have at least a round a month. I play more now, but... yeah, I mean, 97 Woods Masters wins it. He's 19 years old, you know, and we're all just like, let's play this game. And it was just fun. And then went over to the big boy course at Rancho and
did you rent
high school golf.
You played in high school too.
I did, just for the first year. And I had, just the first year. I went to Sports Chalet, which I don't think exists anymore. And I bought a set that was like, you know, like a, I was about, like for a teenager, it was like Wilson maybe, but it didn't have all the clubs, 7, 5, driver, wedge.
Right.
And used that for a while. And then my uncle got really into it. And then I would go with him. And Then he gave me some hand-me-down clubs and that type of thing.
Right. And so Rancho, you know, this really great institution, public municipal golf in Los Angeles. How do you play there often now? Or now you join Mountain Gate.
I joined Mountain Gate. I'll still play Rancho at least twice a year. I'll play Rustic a couple times a year. Like, that's the thing. Like, I love golf. I can't just be like a one club, one course guy. Like, I got to go everywhere. Now, I really have included golfing in my travels now. So last summer I had to go to Paris for work. I played that Le Golf National twice. I had to do some work in San Francisco. I met my wife in Monterey and played Pebble. So I've really, like, you know, I am playing great golf non-LA, but even in the city, like, I can't play Mountain Gate every week. I need to come do some links. I need to do Rancho. It doesn't get boring to play Mountain Gate, but it, in a way it does. I need different golf. And there's a difference between municipal golf and country club golf. And I think municipal outside of the weight is super underrated if it's a great course. I mean, I love a good public golf course.
Yeah.
And Rancho is maybe one of the most premium of them all.
Absolutely. What do you see as being the biggest part of that difference there?
I just think there's more true soul golfers, if you can say that, if that makes sense. Everybody there is there for golf only, really. And you can feel it in a way.
Right.
And I don't know. I love, even as a single, it's fun. I don't remember the last time I went out as a single at a private club and like just went in a group and was part of that group, you know? Well, and my club's a freaking public course at the end of there. There's 4,000 people there, so you know that's not gonna happen anyways. But yeah, there's just something about it. You can just go to, you just meet the most random. I love going on a little bit of a drizzle day too, because you always get the coolest playing part. I played with Rudy Tomjanovich once at
I don't know who that is.
He won 2 NBA championships. He's like 6'7" as a coach. He won them at Houston Rockets. But like, you know, okay, so he's NBA coach. He won 2 championships. And I remember asking him, I was like 18 at the time. I was like, where's your, where do you keep your NBA championship rings? And he goes, I have no idea. I think they're in a sock in my top drawer. And I'm just like, I mean, now that we're talking about it, I was like, that's municipal golfers. Like, that guy's a millionaire. But like, he doesn't, you know, he's playing a public golf course and he's the type of guy that keeps a $1 million ring in a sock in his top drawer. And I fucking love that shit.
That is really, I guess the municipal golf thing is even a further example of the level playing field of we are all equal.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Non-discriminatory. I like it. But yeah, of course, like, I don't like waiting and yeah, 6-hour round stuck and the greens are stepped on and I get all that, but like, whatever, they're stepped on for everybody that day. I'm not really into scoring, if that makes sense. Like, I'm down, like, going low is like the best.
But you play well. You're a good player.
Thank you. But like, you know, I don't try to lose it over like, who am I kidding? I shoot 95 sometimes and it's right. Fine. Like, I still try to like get a birdie or like have an hit one shot. It's just one shot is all I need to go to bed a little easier that evening, you know, and that doesn't need to be at a country club or and it can be anywhere. So I don't know. Yeah.
You were one of the first people, or you were the first person to tell me about pancakes at Penmar.
Oh, yeah.
Which was this 9-hole course in Venice. You got me, and then I'm taking Pierce and Andy from me and my golf.
So good.
We loved it.
They're so good.
How do you?
Why are they orange? Do you have any insight?
They put.
He didn't tell me.
It's banana and vanilla. No, they told me.
Okay.
It's in the video.
Gus told you?
Yeah.
He doesn't like being on camera.
I think we asked him off camera.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's a nice guy. Do you know that he doesn't eat eggs?
You did mention that, I think.
Which
very
is
bizarre.
So weird for a guy that makes breakfast every day.
He's staring. Maybe that's why he doesn't eat eggs.
No, that's why his pancakes are so good, because there's no eggs in them.
But you told me about this, and I thought that was really interesting, is because you had basically treated the golf itself as a way of kind of being a tourist in your own city. The idea of going to this golf course to get the pancakes. Like, it just seemed, I don't know, it was very exciting for me. I thought it was cool.
I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, we had a good time there. And do you get to play golf on the road when you're traveling, or?
Not obviously. I'm going to Munich tomorrow, so not, you know, that's not
kind of chilly
there setting.
Right now.
Yeah, and then I'll go to Milan in February. Not really there. Although I have a sales rep who wants to take me to play. Like, he's a really good foot golfer, and he says he plays in the cold.
Never tried that.
I did it once in England. It's hard. I mean, I'm not good at soccer in any way.
No.
I play if it's the right season in the right place, but I love taking my clubs with me if I can play. And actually, I'm lying. I'm going to Milan, but then my sales rep just bought a place in Marbella, south of Spain.
Yes.
And we're going for 3 days, and we're playing golf like every day after the thing.
Oh, that's awesome.
After the trade show. That is awesome.
I've heard there's some really good golf down there.
I know. I got to find it. You got to help me.
Yeah, yeah, I know. I think Jimenez has a course down there.
I would love to. Oh, is that public, though?
Probably.
You'll get me on.
We'll sort it out. We'll sort it out. Yeah, they were like, Miguel Angel Jimenez would like you to come do this event. And they were like, we'll fly you from Europe. And I was like, well, you're already in Europe. I mean, I live in America. And they were like, well, you need to get to Europe. And I was like, well, then I'm not like, I want to do it. But
he's the best, right?
He's a good guy. I regret funny. Not going. So I
went up to clips of him. He's like,
oh, he's hilarious.
He got in a fight with Keegan Bradley one time or
something. Oh, that was big. That was heated. He was on the range once. And I said, can I ask you a couple questions? And he looked at me up and down. And then he goes, I need me time. And just like walked away. I was like, okay.
Good for you.
Respect.
At least he knows that.
Respect. Yeah, I mean, he didn't make it weird. He was just very straight up. Yeah. Not personal. So is there anything you're looking for in golf that you haven't had yet? I mean, do you...
No, I mean, obviously a hole-in-one, but I'm a collector. So, like, I have been to 16 baseball stadiums. I've been to roughly 10 NBA stadiums. Like, I have a, you know, unwritten life goal of going to all the venues. And when I went to Wrigley Field, I just literally, I think I watched one inning and just walked and just thought about like all the things that have happened there. I just love sport. I'm crazy about sport and sport history. I don't know why. I mean, I know that I grew up in a sport family. I grew up in a baseball. My dad was a baseball player. So baseball is like chief number one than basketball probably. But I'm obsessed with sport and venues that just because the greatness that happened in those places, like magic almost, you know? I don't even remember the question, but yeah, I'm a collector and my goal is to just collect the courses. Like I played Bethpage last year. I just want to go where these like things happened, you know, ultimately.
Is that mostly about the professional game or would you be happy to play somewhere that isn't necessarily professional? It's, you know, like more of just like a special architect in a corner.
I wouldn't like that as much as I should.
Interesting.
And I hope I grow to do that. I've read some things and listened to some of your podcasts just about, like Roosevelt. You did a feature for me about Roosevelt. You know, like, I don't not like Roosevelt, but, like, there's something with me where it's like, it's 9 holes and I'm playing 18.
Golf is 18.
I don't know. Yeah. For me, golf is 18.
Right.
I need to grow to like that. I probably would have a better short game, too, if I did.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this. So, let's go to a Kutch commercial really quick. Hang on. All right, everybody. Got a great read for you here. Stay tuned till the end of it because there is a massive deal at the end of this read. Precision Pro Golf, maker of the NX7 Series Rangefinder, is proud to bring you this spot on the Eric Anders Lang Show. The Eric Anders Lang Show is bringing golf to the masses, which is pretty rad. And Precision Pro is bringing accurate measurements to golfers at an affordable price. Their NX7 Series rangefinder was named Best Value Golf Rangefinder by MyGolfSpy.com. You heard that right. Best Value Golf Rangefinder at MyGolfSpy.com. With all the bells and whistles that golfers love, without the bloated price tag that other companies charge, it's the perfect rangefinder to add to your golf bag this year. So right now, Precision Pro is offering $20 off the NX7 Series rangefinder. Go to precisionprogolf.com, precisionprogolf.com, and use coupon code ERIC, E-R-I-K, do not spell my name wrong this time, folks, for a free lifetime battery replacement, for $20 off, and then you also get free lifetime battery replacement service. Whoa. Dude, you know how many times my battery dies in my rangefinder where I'm just like, grind, give me a battery. They're so expensive. If you can actually take advantage of that, you could eventually get a free rangefinder by the end of the time. They're not joking, folks. Lifetime battery replacement services. You can check out the awesome reviews on their website or on Amazon. Amazon, that's what's up. To read what other golfers are saying about Precision Pro Golf rangefinders. Once again, go to precisionprogolf.com and use coupon code ERIK, K as in awesome, for $20 off. Swing with confidence. Hit more greens with Precision Pro Golf. All right, folks. You know my favorite golf shoe, don't you? I think you do. It's Three Stripe Life, y'all, and that means Adidas. I just wanted to tell you that when I'm a big fan of the Tour 360, obviously, and they've made a huge update to the Tour 360, and the
two letters that it's concerned with are the letters X and T, okay? The Tour 360 XT changes the game, okay? It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round. By the way, a light golf shoe is what I'm all about. A heavy, there are some other companies making heavy golf shoes, and I'm just like, by the way, I weigh enough. There's enough going on. I'm carrying a golf bag. I'm carrying my team. Tour XT changes the game. It's lighter, so your feet feel even better after a round, and it still features that Boost, y'all. Do you know where Boost comes from? And Boost is cool because it only comes in black and white. I don't know if you noticed that. And actually, the guy who made Boost like was going to bring it to some other, you know, they were shopping it around, and everyone else said no. Adidas was like, I'll take that Boost, even though it's only black and white. And what did Adidas do with it? They made it awesome. I'm looking at Boost right now on my feet. Boost on my feet. And it has an X-shaped traction system that gives you insane stability. Literally, it's not sane. It's literally crazy. Your feet will literally be like, I'm crazy. Best part, it comes in spikeless. Ooh, that's tight. The first spikeless ever in the history of the Tour 360. Crazy comfortable and perfect for the course. Get your pair at adidas.com. Thank me later. Follow Adidas Golf for all the latest and greatest. That's all true statements right there. Check it out. Go support Adidas because they're a good company, good people. All right, later.
So, yeah, we're back, and I think we were going to talk about Spectacle.
Yeah.
This this magazine, this zine that you do, mm-hmm. that you developed out of the desire to basically what? Like I guess own your own marketing for the brand?
No, I mean, we always owned our own marketing because we're private and whatnot. It just developed. I'm a writer, and I love writing, and I felt that the catalog concept was not authentic. And we made our first catalog, and we did it on newsprint, right? But it was just photos of my friends at Jelena. My store was right next to Jelena on Abbot Kinney, so a lot of my friends worked there, and they're so beautiful. They, like, hire the most beautiful people, right?
Right, right.
And the space, the light is so perfect, and we just went in there. But it was a good idea. We went...
Jelena, if you don't live in L.A., is this sort of the coolest and most beautiful pizzeria ever.
Pretty much.
It's more than that. But
more than a pizzeria.
But the pizza is just insane.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
So... you know, it was me and my creative director, and we kind of were like, let's just shoot them folding napkins before they open. Let's just shoot the staff in their, you know, waiter
That's good.
Attire. And it was great. But we printed it on a newsprint, and I think that's when it was just kind of like, in my mind, like, there should be words attached to this, right? Because I'm more of the words guy. My creative director is a little bit more into the, you know, photo side of things. And that medium anyways. So then quickly after that, we're like, let's do a magazine. Let's feature Los Angeles culture and, you know, music, art, fashion, architecture, whatever. And, you know, fast forward, we've had 10 issues and we've done some amazing features and featured some amazing people and places. And then this past season, it became a little redundant for me. Like, I got a little tired of, like, another, you know, Neutra house and another chef and I'm just crazy about golf. And I was like, just in order to re-inspire, I just want to go full golf for one. And I think the brand works best when it's me being me anyways.
Right.
And and with social media, it's like everybody they know I love golf. I'm posting it all the time. Right.
Right.
So why not? Just dive in.
Right.
Whatever.
I love it.
Who cares? That's the beauty of it. I can do whatever I want.
that is the beauty of it. And the beauty is that you're willing to say, you know what? Fuck it. Let's try something.
Yeah.
Let's just experiment. Is that hard to do? Did you have to learn to do that?
To just like engage the freedom?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No.
Well, I mean, because now you're running a business worth, I'm assuming, a lot of money.
Right.
And you're here saying, yeah, let's just try this.
No, I always did that naturally. And then over the last few years, I think I did less of it.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to go back to the Garrett that didn't give a shit.
Good. Is that scary?
With respect to the 50 people who work for me and, you know, making sure their paycheck keeps coming in. Like, it's all needs to be organized and a little more calculated. It was totally free 8 years ago. There were no budgets.
Right.
That didn't. I mean, there should have been probably. I probably have more money in my pocket right now if there were, but in a way, there shouldn't have been. You know, we're here.
Well, but how do you see the difference between the two, money and sort of success and happiness? I mean, are they necessarily related for you?
No. Actually, I'm the other way. Like, I'm trying to train myself to care more about money. For me, it's never been the goal, ever. It's always just been... back to what you said, just like passionate and the company and the culture and the people and creating jobs. And, you know, my head designer is basically, you know, I hired her off Craigslist 6 months into this business, and I had a retail store. I didn't have Garrett Light. It was called A Kinney Court. It was just a retail store. There was no Garrett Light. She worked as a retailer. Then I was going to launch a brand. She worked as a, you know, sales associate, and I was going to launch a brand. And I did like quizzed her. She was from design school. I gave her a quiz. I was like, I'll give you a dollar raise if you guess what the difference between these two drawings are. And she like guessed it in 10 seconds. I was like, shit. Okay.
Amazing.
Not a big deal. I'll give you the raise. And then anyway, she worked her way into being the head designer now. And it's basically like one and two. And the company perceives us as like a, you know, brother sister type of like thing. And it's just always been about that. It's been about this 23-year-old girl who's now 33 and bought a house and is building a house in the back and of that house. And, you know, it's just been about that. And my COO, who was operations manager, you know, and just like, hopefully just seeing people grow and then customers being happy. And even I've even witnessed retailers that launched their store the year that we launched, and now they've got three stores. And I think that's in large part due to how many Garrett Light frames they've sold.
Right.
And I like that. And yeah, that ultimately can bring us finance and or money. And yeah, maybe now I'm trying to learn how to care a little bit more about that.
Right. But it's never been about that. It was always about just sort of...
It still is about that, but it may be just a little bit more like, okay, you know, we've got too much of this or too much of that and we don't need it.
Right.
And it's for the greater good of everybody if we just do, you know, less of this, more of this.
So you said earlier you don't really care about the fact that golf isn't really categorized as being stylish, right? But you may not care, but I mean, what do you think golf needs to do to sort of move out of where it is? Because I mean, I see problems, and women see problems. Women aren't allowed to dress well on the golf course. What's the problem?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a problem around style in golf. But like, I don't like the first sentence you said was like it's not associated with good style. But like, Caddyshack. I mean, Chevy Chase. I'm like, I'm just trying to be Chevy Chase.
Well, classically like it is, but that's also a generational thing. Like the problem is like you want to say white belts, but you know, like large logos. I don't know.
I mean, that stuff sucks.
It sucks. It's like they want every golfer to literally look like they are an athlete.
I don't think they want anything. I don't think other than a big logo. Like I don't think they know what good style is.
Interesting.
And by they, we're talking about like the major sponsors, right?
Yeah.
I just don't think they're aware. I think they don't know who to hire and how to get it done. It's really just the way things are cut, and the patterns that are made. They're like, and also I think it's being made for the sake of it. Like these brands, it's, you know, spring 2019. We have to have a new collection.
Right.
But nobody's inspired by anything. But
right.
We have to. We're going to show. We need 32 SKUs of these and 40. It's like, why don't you just scale it back to just wanting to make cool shit?
Yeah.
I think it's just become
Well, they don't have freedom. They don't have flexibility.
They're too corporate.
Yeah, they have to do exactly what they did last year and better.
It's going to take a lot of little guys, I think, a lot of little guys to just make up, you know, speak to that younger audience. It's just, they need choices. You're not supposed to wear like a Reebok socks with a Nike shoe and all these things. But for golf, I think in the future, and it won't be Nike and those brands per se, but I think, we need that option to pick and choose. Like I have, you know, these pants with that shirt and these socks because these guys make the best socks. These guys make the best pants. And these guys, I mean, it's going to be about the little guys, I think.
That's super cool. That's inspiring actually, because that feels like a prescription or a prescription for how to fix it. That's reasonable. And it's already starting to happen, right? You've got Malbin.
So.
You know Malbin.
Yeah, you got Malbin, but there's other guys too. I met one of the guys that at the ACL thing, Dunning.
Michael
or something.
Dunning, yeah, Ralph
you
Dunning.
Their
he's
staff,
a good
right?
guy. Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
In fact, Ralph Dunning made the first pair of pants that I really liked.
Yeah, you were talking about that.
By the way, a lot of people ask what pants do I wear. It's not about the pants. It's that you get them tailored.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're not wearing golf pants.
No, today I didn't for whatever reason.
What are these pants?
They're from
wearing?
RTH on La Cienega, which is an amazing store. They're the best. It's probably the best store in LA.
RTH.
Yeah.
I'm going to check it out.
It's on La Cienega. But I don't know. I like to feel like I could walk off the course and go straight into my office. That's
very hard to do.
That's a big deal for me.
Yeah.
But what I started out with today, but it got too hot, I could wear that to work.
100%. Sure. Yeah.
That's a big deal for me. I don't know why that is. I got that thing. I want it to look more like, you know, work wear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be great. It doesn't make sense that you're sort of separating the two. But you're very casual in your work, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah. assuming that you have a casual job, yes. Then I want it to be more like workwear. But
right.
I don't know. I don't necessarily have the prescription. I think just a little more passion would go a long way.
Yeah.
A little less about the dollar, a little bit less about the corporate. And because what I've heard about the industry in general, it doesn't surprise me, but it's just like, there's like two players and they like pretty much own everything and they buy up everything that's cool.
Right.
And that's not any different from eyewear. It's the exact same thing.
Really?
But eyewear has, yeah, Luxottica. This, and they, and then there's Marchand and Safilo, and Luxottica owns, you know, they own Sunglass Hut, they own Ray-Ban, they own the insurance companies that you buy the lens. I mean, they own everything. And I forget the stat, but they're like a $9 billion business and the industry is like $60 billion or something like that.
Whoa.
And then you got Safilo and Marchand. They probably together are $5 billion, you know. So you've got about, you know, more than, you know, five guys that make up more than half of the entire industry. And then you've got guys like me. And but in eyewear, there's more. There's a little bit more. But I think it's because it's driven by fashion. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so there's more room.
Golf isn't driven by that. It's sport.
No, yeah. Yeah, golf is driven usually by sponsorship, which, you know, there's no one wearing a Garrett Light logo.
No.
Not yet.
They should, maybe. That's another thing we should talk about, because I'd love, if you get any feedback, but just the idea of golf eyewear, right?
Yeah.
I'm just really thrown for a loop and want to know when this whole rap kind of frame became like the go-to, because I still see the ads, like the Bubba Watson ads that say,
yeah,
you want to see golf like Bubba. First of all, no, I'm never gonna see golf like Bubba, like ever gonna ever be part of my life,
right?
You know, no, I just want to look better than him,
right?
You know what I mean? Like, that's what he does. I come to the course and I just look better than him.
Yeah.
You know, he should want to look like me.
Yeah.
And also, when's the last time a guy hit a great shot, or like a pro, first of all, I don't see him wearing it a lot in a tournament, and they were like, it's the glasses.
Yeah, never.
I won the Masters because I was wearing those glasses.
Well, they talk about Bubba's glasses being making it easier to see the ball or something. I don't understand. It feels like a bold claim.
He's got caddies and TV cameras.
That's true. And he's just like, he could hit the ball with his eyes closed.
Yeah.
One of my favorite golf style icons is this guy, Robert Rock. Do you know who I'm talking about? Robert Rock is, I actually don't know where he's from, but he plays in the European Tour. I'm pretty sure he's English. He doesn't wear a hat.
That's rad, although the skin cancer thing, but that is rad.
He doesn't wear a hat, and I don't think he wears glasses either. And I said, why don't you wear a hat? And he said, well, I have great hair. And I said, noted. But I said, also, do you lose
you
money
by
not, thank you.
I've gotten compliments.
You've got good hair, too.
Yeah.
He said, do you lose money by not wearing a hat, you know, be decreased sponsorship? And he said, yeah. I was like, wow, but you still choose not to wear a hat. He's like, yeah, I don't want to. And it kind of blew me away.
That.
Yeah, and I thought that was really cool, and he was just doing his own thing. But, yeah, there aren't a lot of other individual people out there in golf. I mean, I guess there's maybe, I don't know, a Duffner doesn't wear a logo on his hat, a couple others, but mostly.
But these guys should not be the fashion icons. This is where guys like you and me need to be more. This is why the micro-influencer in golf is so important, in my opinion, because if these guys continue to be the fashion icons within the golf industry, then the next generation isn't going to look good either.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, there's too much money in golf, so I don't blame these guys. Like, you know, you can fly free and we'll give you $500,000 wearing net jets on your neck. Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
like,
a deal.
I don't blame the guy, like, of course. But
yeah,
that's kind of why social media, and I think some of these micro-influencers that dress different, it's like those should be the style icons for the golf community. And then the other guys are just, I mean, I don't know. I just love pro golf because it's just insane, right? You know, like, it's just.
You
like,
go a little crazy,
it's,
yeah.
But it's just the greatest. They're just doing it at the highest level.
Right.
Constantly just like, wow.
And the more you play golf, the more you see how good they actually are.
Correct.
Yeah, on their best day. You're just like, how did you do that?
Do you ever hit a shot, like a you ever hit a shot and go, oh, golf shot? Like,
yeah,
like,
yeah. Once every couple rounds.
Yeah, once every like four or five rounds. That's
yeah,
the best, when you like know a pro couldn't hit any better.
Well, that's one of the things they say that makes golf so addicting, is that, you know, any hack could hit a shot and that a pro would take any day.
100%.
Once a round or something.
It keeps you coming back.
What? But yeah, going back to it's very interesting to think that the pro golfers shouldn't be the style icons, because in most sports they are. But the problem is that you see most athletes have good style, I feel like.
No,
basketball,
but this is the thing, dude. No, because we're talking about while they're playing. So
exactly,
basketball
they have
players are wearing uniform jerseys.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, maybe they're off the court like some of those guys
press conference
cool or whatever. Right. But
yeah, golfers should
actively wearing.
Golfers should be able to change before the
press
conference.
Best opportunity to actually look like better than every other sport. Baseball
right
players have a uniform. Basketball players have a uniform.
Yeah, golfers are like race car drivers.
You know what I mean? Because a golfer should take a shower before they go do their press conference, like every other sport, but they don't because they need to have the logos on.
Really?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. It would seem like that would be a large part of it.
This whole process is just interfering with the betterment of the golf attire.
It really is. It really is, you know, because, yeah, you don't I don't go into many pro shops, and I've stopped buying things in pro shops. Do you buy anything in a pro shop anymore?
You mean like at a golf course?
Yeah.
Yeah, pro shop.
What do you pick up? Like a belt?
I know. This is me collecting. Every time I play a new course, I buy the ball.
The golf ball. And do you have a display case?
No, but I don't buy anything else. Yeah, I have a display case.
Really? Oh, I'd love to see this. Yeah. Will you take a picture and send it to me?
It's on my Instagram.
I want to. Okay, I'll check it out.
I feel like I also read an article recently because I didn't know this, but guys who played golf in the juniors or whatever, it's like if you're playing with plastic tees, you're a hack. If you have like one of those folded towels, you're a hack, or like golf clothes like from the shops.
Right.
Or the rack of like the guys that buy the golf ball.
But right.
I'm like, well, fuck off.
Who cares?
I'm a collector. Okay.
No one's gonna put you in that category. Winding down, what would you say style advice for those out there that are looking to up their game a little bit?
That's a hard, good question because if you're gonna shop within the golf, you know, world, it's challenging because there's not too many options. But I feel like, I mean, I just would, you know, like you go shopping with your girlfriend or whatever and you're not looking, right? Like, let's say it's a unisex store. I would just say maybe like always be on the lookout for something that you could wear in golf. I think my mind is always revolving around fashion and clothes, right? So I'm always looking whether it's like in a shop. But I think a lot of guys, especially golf guys, when it's time to go shopping and, you know, brunch and shopping with a girlfriend, they're like, as soon as the brunch is over, they're checked out of that part maybe.
Right, right.
But, you know, and they're mostly shopping at Roger Dunn or like buying a shirt in the pro shop. Like maybe just use that time to think about what you would wear on a golf course while you're not at shops that are selling golf only.
Right.
And then you might find some gems every once in a while. You might find a cool pair of pants. You might find a shirt that just, you know, just a diamond in the rough.
That's what I found. I've been pretty lucky. You know, like a lot of things I found is from these just non-golf stores in the mall.
Yeah.
Names I don't need to mention, but you get it, right? Yeah. Just these like sort of like cheap stores and you're like, that's a $10 golf shirt, but it's amazing. And no one would guess.
Also a lot of vintage shirts. Like
eBay.
Collared shirts. Or I love that, like, go on eBay and literally, like, they can be golf brands. The vintage shit's better.
Vintage golf.
Yeah, dude. It's just good. Just like, what did I want to get? Like vintage shoes.
Oh, wow.
What did I find? Like some, I don't want to.
They were probably Adidas, so we'll just keep,
like,
leave it at that.
Joy,
oh, they were Adidas. That's awesome, dude. Okay, right, yeah, this podcast is brought to you by Adidas.
Okay.
So
I have a question for you.
Yes, go ahead.
But I don't know if it helps wind it down. You're not from Los Angeles, right?
True.
I was just curious, and you golf all over the world.
Yes.
And I was just curious how you would describe, in general, the Los Angeles golfer versus the golfers around the world.
As a person.
As a person.
That's interesting. Well, I mean, you know, L.A., obviously, it's one of its richest facets is the diversity. So the L.A. golfer, it's almost impossible to pin down, right? Because you've really got many, many types of people. You've probably got five. Whereas in Scotland, there's like two. There's like a Scottish guy or girl, and then there's like an American.
Right.
Basically, yeah. Who's like visiting.
Who's visiting, yeah.
But LA, you've really got, you've got the country club type who just like literally is just, you know, would kill people if it meant that they could have a better toilet paper.
And how does that compare to where you're from, country club guy?
So I never played golf in New Jersey.
Okay.
I've only been playing golf since moving to LA. I moved to LA 10 years ago and I started playing golf 7 years ago.
Okay.
So I was already here. So golf for me, this was my ground zero for golf. So going to the Wilson and Harding driving range, that was my first study hall. And so it was a high percentage Korean, you know, men and women older. And then there was a handful of hipsters. There was a handful of, well, you know, Wilson and Harding are staffed by community service members who are, you know, paying their hours back for DUIs and whatnot.
Mean to me.
Yeah, and then, you know, so for me the greatest part for me about learning to get into the game of golf around LA was that cultural diversity everywhere you went. Because I was mostly frequenting public courses. And then years after beginning to play, I finally played Wilshire. That was my first private course that I ever played. And it was ultimately the one that I ended up joining. But I remember that was like, you know, whoa, no flip-flops, have to wear a belt. Whoa, all these crazy rules. But everybody was still really nice. So, you know, I mean, the LA golfer is going to be more laid back than your New York golfer. That's for sure. The New York golfers are a bit more conservative. In the South, Atlanta area, the most conservative, I would say, in America, maybe aside from Texas. But then again, you still have, you know, club to club to club, right?
Different personalities.
Yeah. Japan is insanely conservative.
I want to play there so bad. I go there every year.
You actually don't want to play there.
It's hard to play there.
You do not. It's a full day.
Yeah, no, you get 1 hour lunch.
Yeah, you'll leave the hotel. It's an hour drive. You play the front nine, 2.5 hours, mandatory 1 hour lunch, then back nine, 2.5 hours, then drive home.
But I mean, I want to play there once. What do you mean?
You should do it.
Yeah.
Maybe. When are you going to be there next?
Which course? April.
Oh, I'm going to be there in March.
March what? I'll be there March 31st.
Yeah. No, I'm going to be there beginning of March, but second week. But they say, you know, there's good courses. Okay. There's good courses. We'll figure it out. There are a couple publics that you can play that are fine, that get the point across. Gil Hance actually has a course there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. We just played at Gil Hance.
We did. And, you know, I mean, man, like, there's a lot of good golf out there. They go crazy for it. It's meticulous. But a lot of Japanese.
It's an experience.
It's totally an experience. And that's what Adventures in Golf is built on, is this idea of, you know, you sort of have a litmus test for culture when you boil everything down to a golf course. Mm-hmm. But most Japanese actually go to Thailand to play golf.
Why is that?
Because Thailand is just cheaper, easier, more golf. The vibe is better.
Yeah.
But yeah, they leave.
Korea is like the craziest.
And Korea is actually the most expensive in Korea.
Most elite, most exclusive.
Yeah, and they go to Thailand too. They all go to Thailand because the golf in their own country is too expensive.
That's great.
Too exclusive.
I mean, that's good to know.
It's very good to know. So yeah, I mean, the LA golfer, they're a laid back type. There's the LA public golf scene is among the best in the world. Unfortunately, we don't have like a comp to Bethpage or Torrey or Chambers or, you know, these wonderful world class.
Totally.
You know, sporting locations.
We don't have that. No.
We don't yet. We might, but we have a lot of great courses, and I'm excited to hear the response to the article that you asked me to write for the magazine. I think it was pretty good. Thank you.
The photos are great. The story write-up is awesome. It's exactly what I wanted.
So you wanted it to be about golf, but there was a special water component?
Well, the whole zine is about golf, so I wanted, like, my customer doesn't care about golf. So I can't just write. Not,
right. Yeah.
I
guess they
don't. I can't just do 105 pages of like swing technique. You know what I mean? Like, they just don't care about
that. How Garrett shot 75.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you wrote a story about, you know, and also like if I was, especially in these times, you know, environmentalists and whatnot may think of golf as, you know, nonsense because it's the much water that it uses. So that story is important.
Yeah.
To show people that we're not just, you know, eating the land and don't give a shit. Like, we want to show you that, you know, some of these courses do care, and the reusable water. And so that's really cool. And we wrote about food because my customers are foodies. And we wrote about architecture because my customers care about design. So we tried to diversify the content. One of my favorite stories is by my best friend, Ron. And it's he's a terrible golfer. And it's about how he killed a bird.
Oh, no. That was the first birdie. I think that's where birdie got its name, in Atlantic City.
Really?
This story was told, Atlantic City Country Club, a guy hit a bird and beat par by one stroke, so they called it a birdie.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the story. There's some discrepancies there. But.
So that's a good one, too, and it's actually titled Fuck Golf, because he's like, he's just like, God, like, I killed a bird.
Yeah, he's a murderer.
I'm a murderer.
He's a golfing murderer.
Yeah, the opening line is, the bird I murdered was beautiful.
Ron's a good dude. We talked a little bit. So what's cool about this is we did an article on Roosevelt, this 9-hole course in LA, Muni, that's redoing their water system to go into non-potable water, reclaimed water, recycled water. And I guess what's going to be cool is that this magazine is ultimately a real positive take on golf. How can people listening to this get a hold of it?
If you're in one of the major cities that we have a store in, so San Francisco, LA, or New York, you can just pop by the store, which I encourage because they can, you know, walk you through it, show you the frames too. But you can just go on our website and pay shipping.
Nice. Oh, that's cool.
GarrettLight.com and I think
LEIGHT.
LEIGHT. And just go to Extras, which is where we sell things that are not eyewear.
Okay.
And it's free, but you just have to pay for shipping. We don't charge you shipping on glasses, but
right.
If we
free zine with glasses, maybe no.
No, oh yeah. If you buy a pair of glasses, you get
okay. There
we
you
put,
go.
We put one in every order, but
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, no, but you know we got to cover the expenses.
You put one in every order. It's yeah. quite a large format magazine.
It's big, yeah.
Yeah, I was impressed when you sent it to me. I have a couple copies. I really, cool. I was very impressed. It
took me a while to get you one. That's just me. But yeah,
you gave me many of the I all the copies.
Like three or four. No, I give you 10.
Yeah, they're all there.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
I got one of each.
No way.
You're so surprised.
Well, I didn't
is someone
do
getting
it.
Fired now?
No.
Yeah, no, I have them
not
all.
Patrick
I selected.
Sent it and wow. No, this is more just like, I don't think they're worth anything, but like Spectacle 1, I think we have 25 left.
Oh, wow.
So like, I would just put that one away if I was.
I'll take good care of it.
Yeah, because I have like three at my house, and those are like the mint ones. And then I have one like hanging in a thing. And this is just my, you know, my
right.
stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So we're gonna wind down, and you, I mean, to get in touch with you, your small Instagram is what?
Garrett underscore GLCO, and GLCO is just Garrett Light California Optical. It's our acronym.
Oh.
So at Garrett underscore GLCO, everybody in the company that's kind of been there a while is like at Elena underscore GLCO.
I'm oh, sure they all support of, the brand that way.
Sure
that's cool.
All the guys that listen to this too, you should follow Elena. She's pretty cute.
Yes.
Yeah.
Single Elena?
No, married.
Not
Elena.
Single. Not single. Just, nobody's single.
Nobody.
It's not okay.
But that's part of my strategy. I don't hire single people.
Why not?
I don't.
That's illegal.
That is definitely illegal. No, we have single people, of course.
Sure.
Yeah. So that's my personal. And then the company Instagram is at Garrett Light. Yeah, and GarrettLight.com.
Well, I'm looking forward to sharing this with everybody. I'm looking forward for everyone to go check out the zine. And you did. You said that if someone goes on yeah. the site, they can take advantage of...
Yeah, go on the site, and if you sign up for our newsletter, you actually get a 10% discount. But if you made it all the way through this podcast, and you're still listening to us babble, I'll do another 10%.
He's winging it here.
Maybe a 20% discount. And the promo code, which has not been made up yet, but I'll have to go back to the office and make it, will just be Garrett Golfs.
Garrett Golfs. GarrettGolfs.
Yep. You can take 20% off your purchase.
That's legit, dude. Thank you. I think the listeners will thank you because I do see a very valid reason in having nice eyewear.
Definitely.
And I see...
Lasts you forever if you don't lose it.
Yeah. Let us know if you lose them, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah.
Snowball, thanks you. And yeah, I really appreciate your time, man.
She's sleeping
he's,
so
hard. He's out cold.
I keep saying she.
A lot of people think Snowball's a female, and you're not alone, so don't worry about it.
He's out, dude.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening to the pod. Garrett, thank you for joining us. And we'll see you soon, everybody. Take care.